latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the sun on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. It's exactly 11 o'clock here in the east. It's 8 o'clock out west. And Paul Matisse joining us for his recap. And Paul, given the level at which he plays the game, a DQ in a high-profile spot at the end of a multi-race sequence and in a 19-horse field where the exotics are bonanzas every single year. Obviously, Paul, you know, was involved and playing. And Paul, I'm sure you've been taken down and put up for scores. Where does this rank, and what did you make of it?
Well, this is the craziest one for me betting wise, because it was a derby, and I had a bunch of different bets from different angles, so. And it wasn't one that I knew exactly what I was, you know, how it was going to play out, because when I crossed the line, the only thing that I did hit was I had a future book bet, but a good one. I had Country House in the exacta box with all the other three-year-olds in that one, in one of the pools. Yep. And I had it for a lot. So I don't know exactly what it was going to pay, but it was, you know, he was 68-1, I think, in that pool. So it wasn't going to be short. And then, but of course, I didn't use Maximum Security anywhere So then, when it switched over, I had Country House and some Saber pick fours and stuff, but it could have been a huge score for me. Not that you complain about it when it's an inquiry, but I needed an improbable third for
Saturday.
A big try and a big and the super. Oh, it was kind of like, and the weird thing was, when I watched the race, I thought improbable was fourth. So I'm yelling at my son, did he hold on? when that inquiry started taking, when they didn't just throw it down, and I said, they're going to take him down. You know, I didn't think they were going to have the, you know, that it was going to happen just because, you know. And that's the only argument. We'll go right into it. The inquiry, you know, there's no doubt it was a foul. And it would come down. It was just the fact, I think most of the people that are complaining are the same way, is that it was just kind of an unwritten rule that the Kentucky Derby, there is no inquiries. And, you know, if that's your argument about why it didn't come down, I guess you have a point. You know, I'm okay with that. The idea is, well, the bad part is, and you know what, all this is good. All the talking about racing is great. You know, it's like any other sport. I'm not going to, you love it. You love that people are talking about racing.
Yep.
But the other people don't have an argument. That's a foul. And I'll sum that up real quickly so we can move on. And anybody who doesn't think there was a foul, go out and find one race where a horse on the lead goes to the right, knocks four horses, almost puts one down, comes out five pass, and show me where he didn't go, where he didn't get disqualified. That's the goal for anybody who doesn't think that. Find one. I'm going to give you that liberty. Just one where they didn't take the horse down. You won't find one. You will not find one that they didn't take the horse down, that what the horse did. You know, because that's what inquiries are based on. That's why they started. You can't, when you're on the lead, you can't go to the right. You know, you just can't come out into people when somebody are coming alongside you to pass you, you know. And he did it to, you know, it wasn't a herd. It wasn't a, you know, a slight move. I mean, it was definitely textbook definition of a foul. So, you know, the argument that it's got to be a, you know, even more severe in a Kentucky Derby. I can see that argument.
Paul, if that happens on the first turn, out of curiosity, if he gets out in the first turn and harasses, you know, two or three horses to his outside. Does that get, and then goes on to win? Is it looked
pretty
at
much
left
any
alone?
Time I've ever seen a horse bolt in the first turn, and he carries the horse out in the first turn, he comes down. Pretty much. I mean, I don't see any. If you bolt in the first turn and you take three horses out in the first turn, they take you down. That happens pretty regularly, doesn't it?
It happens. I don't know how regularly it happens.
And it didn't happen in the first turn, but I still think in the first turn, if you maybe in the Kentucky Derby they would have let you because there's 20 horses. That's the only argument of everything is it's 20 horses. The Kentucky Derby, we kind of let you do. We let some more things happen. That's the only argument of why it couldn't come down. And I think that's valid. And anybody who believes that and says that, I'm okay with. I'm okay that that's, if that's what you believe. But, I mean, I'm trying to think of one that bolted in the first turn that didn't get taken down. There's probably some bolting ones in the first turn that didn't get taken down. But I bet they didn't take four horses out.
Right, right. That's fair. I mean, jostling, yeah. and that's fair.
You know, I actually think that the Derby, you know, and especially for handicappers, you know, who which is where I'm more interested anyway. and how it plays out after. I think this is good. The Kentucky Derby is going to be a lesson maybe in handicapping that I'm not sure even, you know, anybody has the answer to. You know, I would be very careful about saying something definitively about, you know, how horses are going to run off this race. I think it's really complicated and really interesting. You know, it's going to be a good lesson and probably to, you know, I'm looking forward to how the horses come back and see, you know, what I have right and what I have wrong and what I can learn from it.
That part of it will be up in the air. I've seen yesterday, Jerry Brown put up Thoroughgraph numbers, and it wasn't fast on Jerry's scale. In terms of ground loss, game winner ended up with the best fig, which is not surprising. I'm even hesitant, Paul, to say, you know, who surprised you, etc., because frankly, that's the worst part of these wet track derbies. It's like you can't even evaluate horses because it doesn't mean a whole lot. Okay, Country House ran great on the wet track and clearly moved up. We knew the Code of Honor. In fact, you even said, I think on Thursday or whatever day you were on, you said on a wet track, Code of Honor moves up. You said you knew that.
I needed him. That was another part of the inquiry that was weird because I needed, if he had won, I used him strongly in all the in the picks. That would have been a huge score if he won. That's why it was a wild inquiry for me. It's a good point. And then you take into consideration that the rail probably wasn't a great place to be. You know,
and usually it is. Usually it is on wet track derbies.
Usually it is, and you know, I'll go back to the figure first because you went there with Jerry. You know, my friend Chris Laramie says, you know, like he's got this idea about having like an Uber rating for every figure, you know, and the day was easy to do. I think some other people have said that, and you break it out into two things. However, the one race that's a little tricky in my eyes is the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, I would give maybe all the other races of the day an Uber rating of a 5, but the Derby's different because, like you said, it was run on a weird surface that they didn't seal initially.
Bizarre.
And I'm not convinced that it was exactly the same as the two races after, even though almost anybody who's doing a figure is going to do that. You know, because it's a simple way of doing it and it plays out close enough. So you're gonna go that way. But I'm not so sure they were the same tracks that they were, you know, that you were running on. So I don't think the figure is an Uber rating of a 5. Then the track, which you know, I didn't really want to be on the right on the rail for most of the day, but for that race, I'm not sure. You know, if it wasn't, you got a couple of horses that really, even though they got, it, you know, you're going to try to decide if the horses on the rail were. If it wasn't dead, they got the greatest trips ever. But if it was dead, you know, who knows? So, I mean, it. And then to throw that on top of everything else, the pace scenario was the strangest pace scenario. We don't get to see enough of these mile and a quarter races, so I don't want to say it's the strangest pace ever, but it's a very different one than anybody's accustomed to seeing, especially for a mile and a quarter race, where it's almost like a harness race. They all left out of there, and then everybody grabbed, and we had this middle back down, and then we had a horse jump on the lead, you know, because he did some crazy stuff. He almost like he broke stride, and then we all got together, and they all, you know, raced home pretty strongly, you know. And that's not how normal mile and a quarter races run. So it's a very, very odd pace, and some of the pace figures the way I played it out pace wise, I think I got it right, but I've seen things that are different, and it's very unique. And you know, and I'll just, you know, give an example of one that's tricky is that I think the horses that were way behind benefited by it. So you have two horses that I've heard are the two horses that are going to win the Belmont, the Japanese master fencer and game winner. But if the pace is what I think it is, they got a big benefit by so, okay, neither one of them got a good trip necessarily, but they got a good pace set up. And, you know, how do you quantify that? This race is very tricky.
Oh, by all rights, under that scenario, you would think that Code of Honor and Tacitus are the Belmont horses you want.
You know, maybe. They moved earlier, but they see, you know, they kind of got into okay positions in the back down, you know. So, you know, and then you take a horse Improbable that I've heard has got the worst, you know, everybody thinks he was the worst in the race. You know, he had no excuse. But he got back down in the slow part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've seen those harness races like what I'm talking about. And sometimes those horses that get shuffled, they're the ones you want, you know, in pace scenarios like this. So it's hard, you know, it's hard to play him with any confidence off this race because, you know, he got out, he had his chance, and he had no real trouble. Where everybody else seemed to have other issues, either being wide or being on the rail or got a physical contact, and he kind of avoided most of that. But pace scenario wise, you know, if you look at the horses that were around him, they all backed up. You know, so I think it's a very tricky race, and I've warned everybody that tells me, well, you know, Game Winner was the best horse. Gonna win the Belmont. So and so's gonna win the Preakness. I said, if you're basing anything off this Derby, be careful. That's my advice.
Well, you know who I think ran well, and I will say about Improbable, by the way, I never enjoy, you know, and I picked him and bet him and keyed him, but I never enjoy when a horse is forced to idle for just an interminable period. You know, when you just got a horse on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold, on hold, and you got nowhere to go, and you can't even use the horse to gain further positional advantage. Horses get very disgusted under that scenario. You know, they're waiting and waiting.
Especially
and waiting.
In dirt racing.
Yep.
Mile and a quarter dirt racing, that's not what you want.
No.
You know?
No.
I agree, it's 100%. That's not that's never what you want. And you know, I'll just take another analogy, and this goes for the Inquiry too. You know, when you talk about what these modern day jockeys want to do, they always tell you the same, and the trainers for that matter, especially Probable's trainer Bob Baffert. They tell you the same thing. It's not about strategy. It's always, I'm going to get my horse into a good rhythm. You know, and Improbable lost his rhythm several times. In fact, he almost fell off, I read, at one point. And so anybody that is the jockey that says that or believes in that, and you know, you have to some degree, I mean, maybe not as much as a jockey, but if you believe in that, you want to start looking at horses that lost their rhythm in this race, you know. And I use that because, you know, in the Inquiry, I don't like the fact that we know that War Will wasn't gonna do anything, you know, in the stretch. He had his chance and whatever. But if there was ever a horse who lost his rhythm, you know, it was War Will. I mean, he was going, by all accounts, by the way it looked anyway, he was running right by Max and, you know, Security at that point. And to say that, all right, once he got back up and everything, he didn't, you know, he didn't finish third, so, you know, he wasn't affected. That, I don't think that's fair either, you know. I don't know exactly. I thought he obviously had a good trip until that point, and, you know, and he maybe, you know, he obviously didn't go on with the horses real late in the race, so, you know, if somebody wants to make the excuse, well, you know, the most famous one is Andy Beyer, who says, well, he would have finished two lengths behind or something. I, you can't say that because you just don't know what was going to happen if he kept his rhythm. He didn't get knocked off his stride and knocked off his lead. So you have those horses too, which you have no idea what to do with. And then you got Long Range Toddy, who doesn't like a wet track. If you've kind of proven that already, to mention with the, you know, you were talking about off track earlier. A lot of these horses, we don't know exactly how they are, plus or minus in off tracks, but we know he doesn't like it. So, there's a lot going on here.
I'll give you a horse. I'm going to give you a horse to follow out of this that tried to make a move at exactly the wrong time in the race. Plus Parfait.
Yeah, the only thing about him is that he's another one that I've heard had no excuse, because he avoided the trouble and he wasn't that wide, The only adult, you think he moved early. I mean, the pace-wise, it might have hit him perfectly. I got to watch him again, because he was back early. He didn't do much in the first half. So I'm more interested in horses that did something in the first half.
Maybe the first, I don't know, three quarters, I suppose, or before the mile. But he tried to move.
Exactly, to rewatch him a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, the pace slowed to such an extent that
he got held up bad.
Exactly.
I picked him up pretty much. I know he was back early, and then I picked him up in the turn, and he seemed to not to have any, issues there. But, like I said, I'm not going to tell anybody no at all on anything in this derby. I think it's very complicated.
Well, beyond this remarkable set of circumstances, were you surprised by the Oaks result in terms of the way in which that race unfolded? And we also don't know because of what happened early when Positive Spirit checked on heels and fell and what impact that had.
Well, of course, that the Oaks was a race that I didn't see coming, but Serengeti Empress is going to be the type of horse where if she does get things her own way and things happen in her benefit, she's going to be one of these one way all or nothing types that we all know, and that's horse racing, especially fillies. My father preaches that all the time. You don't find horses like Serengeti Empress that aren't fillies, but you find them all the time that are. And when they can get loose and when they're running in front of everybody, they become different horses. And I didn't expect that she would do that, but it's not shocking, especially in the environment we are. And, when you want to talk about Uber ratings for figures, that day... that day is a reckless driver, in a snowstorm. there was like seven different track conditions, and a lot of them favored speed. So I'm sure there was some handicappers out there that got smart and said, well, I'm going to take the horses who could get the lead, and that, I think that's the way you could have her. I know. I actually know one who hit the pick five because of that. But just took the horses that would get the lead. That was kind of his idea. I didn't agree with that when they were, beforehand. But I could see, I could see somebody going that direction. And so I don't think she's ever going to surprise anybody when she gets that. She's good. She runs big figures. She wins by big lengths when she's out there. But she is a classic all or nothing.
Yeah, and that was all. And behind her, we should Leora should.
That's
get
what
plenty.
I had. I had the three behind her. I keep Lady Apple when I had with Champion Anyone the best, but I used yep. Leora and. It didn't work out for me. But I thought all three of them ran okay. The horses that ran third on got beaten up a little bit towards the end of the race. So, sometimes that makes it like you would think the figure would be higher than what it actually came up if you base it solely on the races afterwards. So, but like that day, if you want to talk about two you know, races that I don't believe. I know that McKenzie ran good, but McKenzie and the filly there, she's a Julie, they ran back-to-back. The first two races after was Harrowed. And, you know, McKenzie ran about 15 lengths faster than Lady, you know, than she's Julie, if you go by raw times, if you sort of same for both. And I don't know. I find that hard to believe, especially since the, you know, very consistent horses like Brute, the top two horses there who had run fast figures in the past, beat Mopetism and Blue Prize, who are as consistent fillies as they come. They run about the same figure every time they run. And, you know, and they beat them pretty good. And for this one to be 15 lengths slower, you know, let's cause it, that just caused havoc. Not to mention that the rest of the races aren't easy to do either. But you know, usually when they get to the hair of the track, that's kind of the time where you have a little confidence, you know, in the races that they would, that the track would level out and start playing similarly. But I'm not sure it did on Friday.
That's interesting because, you know, McKenzie, that race, McKenzie was what, 4 or 5 lengths ahead of Tom's the Tot, who was 4 lengths ahead of Seeking the Soul. I mean, and these are horses that have got, you know, very, very established form, just as those fillies and mares did in the La Troyenne.
Yeah, I think he ran a lifetime best without clearly. But
McKenzie.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't really want to split the difference on the two and make one fast or one too slow. And, you know, I think that certainly Tom's the Top ran his race. His figure should be pretty easy to do, you know. And even if he did, McKenzie ran a lifetime top. But I don't want to give Tom's the Top, you know, like on a biter scale of 115, you know, and McKenzie 123. You know, I don't think that's what happened on Saturday. But if you want to base it based on almost every other horse that ran in those two races, that's what happened.
Yeah,
you know?
McKenzie. McKenzie was 2.5 seconds faster than She's a Julie.
Yeah, I mean that's. Yep, that's 15. That's 15 lengths. That's about, you know, that's 20, almost 25 buyer points. I mean, you know. You know, that's a huge amount. I mean, you hate to say no, but the it's kind of like these things we dealt with in the McKenzie run, one of the best races that anybody's ever run on Saturday. You know, I mean, you're gonna say he ran faster than Arrogate in the Travers, or you know, I mean, I didn't see it that way after, but. You know, if somebody did, I guess, maybe that's the handicap and that's where it comes in. But I don't think so. I think it's a lifetime top, but it's not that good.
Who's, and who do you prefer in terms of performance, because they're going to meet, who was more impressive then, McKenzie or Mottoli?
What a great race. I mean, that's, you know, not the spectrum, you know. You know, I know, like I mentioned earlier, my father is a big guy that he prefers the horses on the cutback. I know little Andy, you'll hear him talk about that all the time. He likes horses cutting back versus stretching out on a one-turn race. So, you know, I would lean that way just based on, I know that's the right handicap and principles that in a one-turn race you want, if two horses run a similar figure, you want the one cutting back versus the one that's stretching out. But Mottoli's been very impressive, you know. And figure wise, I'm gonna the moves that I've made with the figures, I have them running exactly the same thing going into the
interesting.
Into the mile. I didn't realize that until you asked me that, but I just looked down at my sheet and I had Mottoli pairing up what he ran in the other race, and it just coincidentally is exactly what I gave McKenzie.
I know, I know it's not necessarily completely comparable, but in that Pat Day Mile, which is always a bellwether race and an important place to look for the, you know, what's going to be the one turn, 3 year old crowd. I mean, some of them will go back to regional derbies, you know, things like the Indiana Derby and so forth, and try to, you know, stretch back out to a mile and a 16th or whatever they're going to do. Others will start to go down the Jerkins path. Mr. Money obviously is a bit of a in between type. They briefly thought about the Preakness, but what'd you make of the horses coming out of that Pat Day Mile?
He's not going in the Preakness now, Mr.
No.
Money.
No.
Well, he's one. I think when you and I talked, I talked with Pete Fornatale and Jonathan. I gave that horse out, and that was the horse I liked. Going into the race, and he was pretty impressive. I mean, he got a good setup, but he was never going to lose that race. I don't know. You know, it didn't come up a big figure. That race didn't come up real fast. It was, which was shocking to me. I mean, it wasn't slow, but it wasn't. I had a feeling that when he was running, that he was running really fast. But he's obviously getting good. I think it's a weird bunch of it's a weird crop of 3 year olds. You know, I think it's going to turn out to be a good one because there's so many of them that are good. There's no, you know, great ones. You know, there's nobody that's run figures in the really. But I mean, maybe Omaha Beach you could say is in that group. But you know, I'm suspect that we're even going to see him run again. But there's so many of them. You know, just below that. You know, what you see in the top echelon of 3 year olds. I think it's going to be great for all these races. We got so many of them, you know, that we should have we got enough supply this year for all these 3 year old races. Normally we don't. It should be great races for all the horse racing fans. I'm disappointed that the casual fan or the person that got interested because of the Derby isn't going to see the top two horses run in the Preakness. When somebody says, well, what are you upset about? It's going to be a great betting race. Everybody's saying it's going to be a great, you know, I got some ideas that I'm liking the Preakness. And I think these races are going to be great for, you know, Steve Vick, for Paul Matisse, for people that go to the races every, all the time. But, you know, all this good talk that everybody's getting that, all this good sports talk that's normal, and even not sports, just regular people talk that are interested in these, and you know, and what happened on Saturday are going to tune in now next week, and they're going to say, "What? The two horses aren't running?" You know, and they're not going to understand. They're going to say, "Ah, that horse racing's crazy," you know, and then you know, and maybe they wouldn't go, but if you take a poll of everybody who is a big racing fan, and I've noticed this on Twitter, on people's, you know, feeds, just reading them and just, you know, seeing how they got into racing. You know, the Triple Crown is the gateway into horse racing.
Yep.
The gateway into the full-fledged horse player. You know, the smart people who watch those races and say, oh, this is pretty cool. This really is a smart, you know, this is what smart people do. They track these horses. And they learn about, analytics and logic and sport. And there's just so many great things about racing. And it's just I'm upset that those people that turn in that might see how great it is aren't going to get that opportunity.
No, I agree. That's the one hiccup here. And I suppose it also will reignite maybe
the bonus series would be great.
That's something we got to find a new sponsor for the Visa Triple Crown bonus, you know, whereby, you know, they get points and then it, you know, it'll add intrigue to Belmont you know, when there's, you know, somebody that's going to get a, you know,
yeah, it's a real
nice,
tough one, you know, because, you know, I've thought about it, you know, unending, you know, like what we can do, you know, if you start giving people appearance fees, and you would need a series of vets to make sure nobody's running just to run, and which I think could be done, but you know, it just gets complicated. And then, you know, some of these owners have so much money that you don't know if that bonus would matter. the trainers, who I'm a little disappointed in this because the two trainers involved in this one, racing has been really good to them. You know, every once in a just once, you know, horse players do things that are good for the game. You know, I mean,
sure.
Steve Vick lives his life by doing things that are good for the game. You know, I mean, he's not traveling to Arizona for those, you know, for the riveting interviews. For the, you know, you're doing it for the good of the game. You know, I mean, the, you know, you'd like to see a trainer once just say, you know what, for the good of the game, this doesn't fit my training, but, you know, this isn't going to hurt my percentage. I'm not going to be embarrassed, you know. Let's run. Let's get this on. Let's have fun. Let's do this, you know.
Yeah.
You know, that old, you know, what racing is based out of, it's a sporting gesture, you know. It's
the, sure, spirit, you know, of competition.
My horse is better than yours, and who wouldn't want it at this level, at that, after something like that happens, you know. It's just classic. You, it's classic sports. You want to be, let's do it again.
Let's do it again.
Let everybody watch it. Let's everybody enjoy it. It's why they play the Super Bowl. It's why they play the, you know, these series in the NBA. You know, it's why everybody tunes in the next time. You know, I just wish there was, you know, it's everybody has the right to do their own, their horses, and they can do whatever they want. I just, you know, it's the Triple Crown, you know, kind of
go the extra mile.
Go the extra mile, exactly.
Wow. Paul, you always go the extra mile for us, sharing you know, the information that is constitutes your livelihood, and everybody appreciates it. And enjoy, as always, the post analysis as well as the preview. And on to Baltimore. I'll be down starting Monday, and we'll
have a great trip. That'll be great.
I'll be listening. All right, and we'll talk to you Thursday or Friday.
All right, thank you, Steve. Yep.
Paul Matisse, everybody, and you know, Paul, you've gotten so much more exposure to Paul, you know, since his NHC win, and his insights are, you know, at a level that a few of us are gonna reach in our handicapping and horse playing lives. So it's always a pleasure, if that's the first time by chance that you've heard him, Paul Matisse with two T's, M-A-T-T-I-E-S, Jr., on Twitter. And I can hear in the background Rick Hammerly, who's been, speaking of road tripping, Hammer, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? Yes, we're back home.
Nice.
And it's colder here than it's any place I've been in the last 2 weeks, but had a great run to New Jersey and Monmouth Park and opening day there, and then a little run, surprise run with Mr. Raffetto up to Great Barrington to check on some things. There's some possibilities of running up there, I guess, next year.
Yep, exactly.
In lieu of the Suffolk date. So that was a good little run. Anytime I get a chance to go to Great Barrington, I for some reason, I just love that town and that area up there in the Berkshires. It's just beautiful. It's getting ready to explode for the spring and summertime. So anybody that, especially that trip up the Taconic Parkway there, it's just a great spot to go, especially in the spring and then in the fall when the leaves change. But good run for me, and it was all good.
Nice. And you sent a couple of pictures and made me laugh. And I took Tina there, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, and I put the pictures up. People went crazy. If there's everything is in place to, you know, to give it a rebirth, it'll be unbelievable.
Well, that's true, and there's a possibility, could be a little change as we were walking around the plant. Could be possible turf or possible turf. Looking into that, changing it. Of course, the grass is there now, and I'll send you a picture right now. Standing on the course, which is all overgrown with grass, not overgrown, but it's nice and green. And Lou will come up with those, maybe a little idea, discussed it, and he's thinking about maybe turning it into all turf racing for the time they're up there. So they're looking at all kind of possibilities. They had a group up there. You know, some of the investors and some of the players and looking at it, and they're, you know, just some of the buildings need to be looked at again and could be some tents put up, but it's definitely viable, and could be something special and fun going on next year up in southwestern Massachusetts, Great Barrington.
No, it doesn't. You can't get much further into the corner of Western Mass, but it constitutes one of the great parts of New England racing history. Of course, during the fair circuit season, and it's amazing how many current names and voices in particular. Frank Miramati was there the last season, and I think Larry actually also Colmus called there. I was a kid, when the fairs would roll around, we were physically closest to Northampton, but we've had so many fun conversations over the years, whether it's with Mike Welch and of course, we had Carlos Figueroa live before his passing, and Michael Blowen loves talking, his days working the fair with Carlos, actually, and it's very special. It's a very special history.
Going through the old buildings, rummaged through a couple of desks and came up with a program from the last meet. And
That's great.
Yeah, it was a little wet. It's a little bit mildewed, but I knew we'd find one. And Frank Miramati, I sent a picture of the program. I said, "Remember this?" And he was like, "Wow, one of my favorite places ever to call a race." But some other familiar names on there. But a lot of history. Bill Finley wrote an article about the New Massachusetts Fair Circuit. I don't know, but if you Googled Bill Finley, Great Barrington or Massachusetts Fairs. That was probably from 10, 12 years ago, but I remember it being a real nice piece on just the history of it and how it came to be and how it met its demise. But maybe there'll be a little comeback. But anyway, that was after the that was on the Monday, so we had a couple of days after the big races and. Good to hear. Tell you, first of all, it's good to hear from Sean Clancy, and I know you had Bill Gallo earlier this week about the steeplechase season getting ready to go. So, the Derby weekend signals a lot of things, and racing is really on the fast track with Belmont coming in, and you got Arlington going. And one thing that I don't know if you talked about this week, but Oaklawn Park, extended their meet this year. They extended it. They traded 3 weeks, I think, on the front end for 3 weeks on the back end, and had closing day on Derby Day, May 4th. And, first of all, a lot of horses from that meet performed well over the weekend. We had Steve Asmussen, of course, with the bulk of them. And, the eventual winner was kind of came out of the Arkansas Derby, and just a lot of that meet is really getting good, and I think they benefited from getting out of 3 weeks of cold into some better weather into May, and then of course their new race is going to benefit the Preakness by having a runner come out of there with Laughing Fox, the lead long charge, and at this point Steve Asmussen can do no wrong, but as he usually heats up about this time of year. But just the Oakland horses did very well, and as you mentioned earlier, and we all know that the Fairgrounds Oaks is the feeder into the Kentucky Oaks, and once again it happened, and 13-1. And I made a little note that I wanted to mention here too about take Serengeti Empress and take War of Wealth. So two horses coming into their biggest races of their career, coming off just stinkers one way or another. Serengeti Empress apparently bled, and then War of Will had that awkward start. And so you have these two horses that were going in full speed a month ago, and they had some pretty poor races, questionable whether they were even going to come out and make their races. But now they're in the hands of two excellent trainers. And so the lesson here should be, when you have good horses that throw in a clinker and they're in the good hands of people like Tom Amos and Mark Cassie, and they even attempt to come back and run in the biggest race of their career after that, guess what? They're ready to roll. And this, what they don't, these guys are not going to put their horses, people like people as respected as they are, not going to put their horses in these kind of races if they're just to say we were there. And they both performed well, and you see that time and time again where you look at it and you go, oh, how can this horse come back? And sure enough, they know what they're doing, and you know, Serengeti Empress goes ahead and wins at 13-1, and World Will was running a very, very good race when things happened at the top of the lane. So just a, you know, tuck that away in the future when you see these horses come into the big races off of clunkers, but they're trained by top people. They're not just there for the scenery. So I kicked myself with that Serengeti race, letting her go by at 13-1.
Well, Hammer, I'm going to add Nick Casado to us too here. Nick was with us yesterday, and we got cut off thanks to the brilliance of Comcast. Before Nick folds in, and of course you've dealt with Nick how long? I mean, your whole West Coast tenure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Now, Nick and I are friendly. We're good buddies. I mean, we're buddies. You know, he's more friendly now that I'm not there. But no, Nick is a great owner. He was an agent. He's a great owner now. He's in charge of Slam Dunk Racing, which involves a lot of stuff. And so, you know, we have a lot of conversations over the years about races for his horses and you know, why I would and wouldn't do certain things. And now, we always understood each other. We might have, had a few words in the office, and then we walk out and we go have fun. But he's very good for the game. He's been in it. He knows it. And Slam Dunk Racing has gone national. Started out with a few horses here locally, and he's got a lot of people involved in the game, and that's the best part. And he has fun. He's got a great got his kids out there, and it's always fun to talk to Nick and be around Nick.
Well, and Deja, go ahead and add Nick to the line, and because we were literally cut off as I was asking Nick yesterday, as we can pick up a part two of our discussion with Nick Casada from Slam Dunk. And Nick, welcome back, and sorry about yesterday, but Comcast in South Florida had a extended outage. You're on with Rick Hammerly, and we'll go to the wrap up the show today together. And you know, Nick, I was on the verge of asking you about the West Coast situation and how it's affecting you and what you've said to your partners going forward and what the what the concerns are and what some of the expectations are and how much you're on guard to move the operation to other parts of the country.
Yeah. Good morning, Hammer.
Good morning, Nick.
It has been a really trying time. Unfortunately, with the catastrophic injuries that we had a really bad spell. I think the weather played into it big time. I think management would admit that they probably did some things that they wish they hadn't done. Moving forward, we've had some very, good times recently. Yes, the partners were concerned with the state of not just racing in California, but in general. I think it was something that was a global situation. I mean, I even, with the people that we deal with back in the UK, they've had pressure on them as well. So I think it was a global problem. It wasn't just isolated to California, even though California was kind of taking the brunt of it. All we can do now is just try to move forward and learn from what happened in the past and try to guard the best that we can against things like that happening again.
How much have you, sent horses east as a result of either opportunity or the tumult?
Well, we had already had horses back there, so I wouldn't say that it was this mass exodus for us. It wasn't this, guys, let's pick up our stakes and get out of here. I really haven't sent anything out of here that I wouldn't have ordinarily. I'm a California guy, was born and raised here, so I support the program, and you know, we do want to expand, and we are, but I haven't sent anything out of here because of what has transpired.
Well, you know, what happens, Steve, like Nick, he may have horses in similar conditions where he knows the opportunity comes along once a month, maybe in California, to run those horses, and if you don't want to run them against each other, you're kind of handcuffed. So by sending some horses back east, like you said, they're not just sending them out of necessity of places to run on most cases. Nick has always been a loyal California supporter, and sometimes, I mean, did you think you were going to get this big this quick? And, you know, even when you double up like that, you got choices to make, and sometimes you need to go out of town.
Yeah, exactly. And no, I didn't think we would get this big this quick. Great points you make there, Hammer. And yeah, sometimes we're sending horses out just because we might have a horse with a similar condition and you hate to run them against each other. So, you're constantly shopping spots to find horses where you can possibly win two races instead of just winning one.
Nick, I had to get you back because I wanted to also, in addition to, you know, fleshing out the nice weekend that you had with both the Senorita win and the Distaff Turf Mile, I had to let you riff a little bit about your days as a jock agent and the guys that you handled, and then most important, what was it like to compete against Johnny D for mounts?
Well, we know we've got the Philly's favorite Johnny D probably listening on the radio right now. You guys are great friends, and he actually sent me a text yesterday when I was on the show. I got to tell you, John, I knew John before I became an agent. He was friends with my father. And John really kind of took me by the ear and said, Nick, these are kind of the do's and don'ts. He first of all said to me, do you really want to be an agent? And I said, yes, I do, John, I do. You know, this is when he goes, no, you don't. John is a very candid individual, as we all know. And he taught me a lot of things. You know, he's a good man. He's a little bit of an Italian hothead like myself, but he's got a great heart. You know him well, Steve. He showed me the ropes. He took me underneath his wings, and I had a long run. He was actually gone when I was still doing it. He had moved back to Philly, and I was still kind of plying the trade here out in California. But it was a great run. Had a lot of good jockeys, and developed a lot of relationships because of being an agent.
Who among your riders who had some of the biggest wins from an agent side?
Well, we won a couple Breeders' Cups. I've had Patrick Valenzuela three different times. The late Garrett Gomez, the late Michael Bays, Corey Nakatani. I guess when I sit here and think about it, a lot of the guys that I had are no longer in the game. I guess that makes me a dinosaur. Aaron Grider, Joe Bravo, I had Yutaka Take from Japan, had a pretty long list of riders. Like I said, it was a great run. I developed a relationship with, I wouldn't know half of the people in my world now if it wasn't for becoming an agent and being involved in horse racing. You know, yourself, we got Hammer on the other line. You know, horse racing is, it's a lifestyle. It's not a job. It's a community. And it's just a total different workforce, a different environment than anything I've ever been accustomed to.
And, you know, this side of it, what you're doing with Slam Dunk, it is different. And, you know, there's plenty of people that get into it and they put the partnerships together, you know, more as, you know, their own, as an extension of their own interests. As a business, it's a bit of a different animal too. I mean, is it, how much of it is, you know, personal pleasure and how much of it, you know, has now become essentially, you know, a full-time job?
Another great question. It has become a full-time job. It's a job that I'm passionate about, and I'm excited every morning waking up knowing the challenges that we are going to be faced with, as well as the, the weekends that we just had, the great times. you know, I mean, what I kind of say is that in doing partnerships, you know, we used to have one person that owned 80 horses. Now the game has kind of evolved where 80 people own one horse. That's the great thing about partnerships. It mitigates your risk. It limits your costs on all these animals because they're not cheap. You know, this is a very expensive game. That's why for a lot of people that have started partnerships, it's really the way to go.
And let me jump in. And the reason Nick is successful and his group is, and one of the reasons is he wakes up every day and he does it. And, you know, he would come in and see me or call on the phone a lot of times. And, you know, we would, you know, argue about certain things. But it let me know that he cared about what was going on. I wish more people would come in and talk about things. And, you know, why do you do this? And I need this race, and I want this, and I want that. And so we always had the discussion going, and guess what? You know, it helped me understand, you know, kind of horses he was bringing in, and I needed to give them an opportunity to run. And he understood kind of my way of doing things of you know, we can't do this because, you know, I got another race planned for another horse. But I would much rather have people come in and, you know, get into a little bit of a tussle with them over wanting to run their horses and looking for spots as opposed to nobody saying anything. And if there's owners out there listening or even some guys, go in and talk to them. Hopefully you're able to go in and talk to your racing guy wherever you are and let them know how you know, important it is and how many people you have involved. And, you know, so when Slam Dunk runs a horse or two on the weekend, I mean, the people are out, they're betting, they're enjoying. So it's much more than just a single guy. And as Nick explained, a lot of people own these horses. So when a horse like that gets in from a syndicate, it's great for the racetrack because these people are coming out to the races. They're in the paddock. They're, you know, having a good time up in the box seat area. So, and that's when, you know, I mean, you can tell in my position what I was doing there, who's going to make it and who's not going to make it in a lot of facets of the game. And it's the ones that are there and interested are the ones that usually move on. And it was always fun working with Nick, and we still are friends because of it.
Yeah. I mean, I got to add to that. Thank you, Hammer, for everything you said. Hammer and I have, you know, I mean, we're in a place where we're working together with one goal. You know, we're trying to get races to fill. I'm trying to make my partners happy. Hammer would attest to this. As an agent, I probably saw Hammer maybe 6 times going in trying to get a race written because I pretty much always knew that the trainer that I was riding for has probably already hit Hammer up 5 times for the same race. So I didn't want to beat the racing secretary over the head with trying to get a race written, whereas now with Slam Dunk, I'm pretty much the only one that's trying to get a race written for us. Hammer was always accommodating. He was always straightforward. Hey, Nick, I'd write this, but I can't because I have this coming up. He was always just an honest, straightforward dude that was fantastic to do business with. And Hammer, we miss you, bud. He still does his basketball pools and all that to stay involved. But he'll definitely find a place in racing. There's no doubt about that. We need more Hammers in this game.
And very nice, and Nick, you too. I mean, you know, the way in which you're approaching this, and the success that you're fashioning is obviously the result of the experience and the knowledge. It gives people confidence too that, you know, that kind of are observing from the outside and you know, don't know. I think people are fearful about getting involved. They just, because it's an area that is so unusual and it's so different. So for more of that information, slamdunkracing.com too, for those that want to get in touch with Nick that have listened yesterday and today. And I appreciate it, Nick. And we're going to see you east here anytime soon.
You know, we could make it back there for the Just a Game with Beau Recall. That's kind of
nice.
What we've dog-eared for her next race. So if she cooperates and gets there happy and sound, there's a good possibility I could be back on Belmont Day.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, just a outstanding weekend with big wins in both Churchill and at Santa Anita. And we'll look forward to the We'll look forward to the next opportunity to congratulate Nick Quesada and the Slam Dunk team. And Hammer, final thoughts about the weekend?
Well, in a nutshell, after reviewing a few films and all that, I think the right call was made. You just can't do what that horse did. There's a one tape of the head-on ish where the horse makes the right-hand turn and takes out a few of them. And I thought the right call was made. And as I think Nick Tamaro said earlier, this should maybe be a wake-up call. And let's get some commonality in our rules from state to state and make sure a foul is a foul at every state we go into so the riders know what they can and can't do. But, you know, in this game, you've been around a long time, you think you've seen it all, and then something like this happens. So, but, you know, I got to congratulate both Jason and Jason for getting his horse ready, you know, to run the race that he did, and then congratulations, obviously, to Bill and all the both of their connections for being there and having his horse in a position to get moved up. So, interesting weekend. It's a Derby, and it kind of gets you going for the rest of the year as we head into the Preakness and the Belmont, and I'm sure we'll cross paths between now and then sometimes and at some point, and we'll see Nick down the road as well. So. Always great talking to you, Steve, and Santa Anita, like Nick says, just a couple stakes this weekend. But I think at this point they're just trying to see the finish line and get to the end of this meet and put it behind them and maybe regroup for the fall. But Del Mar's putting out positive signs. They start in 2 months. So racing will continue out here in California, and it has to get better. So that's all we got to say from here. So Nick, good talking to you, and Steve, always a pleasure.
Likewise, guys. Thanks for having me.
Nick Quesada, everybody, Slam Dunk Racing, and Rick Hammerly. And I want to thank them as well as Paul Matisse, James Scully, Nick Tamaro, Marty McGee, Sean Clancy on his way to Iroquois. Race day getting set. You got Stronach 5 action today. You got Cross Country Pick 5 tomorrow and all the Belmont racing. Gus, I put up Gus's plays for today at Arlington. He looked at the whole card. So if you want to play Chicago today, Gus is your man, SteveBick.com. We will come to you Monday morning from Baltimore, from Old Hilltop. Looking forward to Preakness Week. Safe trip today for Minute Mouse. She's in the sixth at Belmont, that rescheduled race from last Friday that got canceled. And Ruben Silvera aboard. Get the mouse around. Get the mouse to the house. Good luck this weekend, everybody. Talk to you Monday.